Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, as we did last week, by stating that, in my opinion, what happened on February 26th in Florida, that little town between Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, was that two douchebags crossed paths, and one of them had a gun. And the inevitable occurred when that kind of thing happens. So we're not laying blame here on one side or the other. So that's like where we start. You're listening to The Ooze. It's that time, Tuesday night. It's 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're with your host, Jason Sterrell, and Rotten Biohazard's on the line. And, Rotten, I picked you up on the line at the very last second. I know you were waiting on hold for a little bit. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Yourself?
I'm doing good. It's just been crazy. This weekend's been really busy. We had our carpet and floor changed in our apartment, so we went from... Yeah, we went from old carpet, really. This carpet was pretty rough. To this is the carpeting we have now it's nice, really nice for, especially when you consider, we live in an apartment complex where they typically, throw down whatever they can get away with. So we actually got some really nice carpet. They pulled up all the tiles and everything in the kitchen and bathroom and my little tattoo area now is all a nice. It looks wood. But it's not. It's some sort of plastic vinyl.
Yeah, it's basically linoleum, basically. Yeah.
Right. So really easy to clean, really resistant to ink and everything else that'll go on it and that kind of thing. So really excited about that. Not, the last stuff kind of, stained easy and everything. So really cool.
Point carpet is a pain in the ass.
What is pain in the ass?
Pulling carpet up.
Pulling carpet up. Okay.
Yes.
So you had some experience changing carpet?
Yeah. Had to pull it up twice in a full house.
I've taken carpet out of one place once and didn't enjoy the experience. But yeah, the people that came in to do it were professionals, and they came in on Friday and did the front half of the apartment, so everything we owned was in the back rooms of the apartment, and then we had to move everything out of the back rooms into the front of the apartment, so they'd come in and do the back rooms on Monday, and I still have shit all over the apartment. I haven't been able to really get anything done. Kind of had to, Thursday night was my last tattoo, and it's, and I haven't scheduled anything until next week, so let's try to get our apartment back together. Besides, we've had other stuff going on. I put out a book this Monday. Finally, released the book. The ads been floating on I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. The ads been floating on the Ooze. There, you'll see it. You see the ad has changed on the Ooze on the image reel there. We've gone to it's now the Jason Sterrell Coloring Book for Adults. That's the official title. It is out. It is in publication, and I have a copy of it here. Turned out exactly the way I hoped it turned out. Very cool. 72 images, 98 pages, and I've been taking orders. Been processing orders and everything else. I haven't gotten the link up on the Creative Body Studios website yet because we've just been busy with so much shit. But there were a lot of people who, in the places I did advertise the book, expressed an interest in purchasing the book, and I've been, you know, reaching out to those people and letting them know about the book. Mostly, it's, you know, a lot of it's bondage art and fetish art and everything. So, FetLife has been really, really good to me this week. So, kind of excited about that. So yeah, that's been our week. That's been our weekend. And on top of that, what I'm dealing with tonight, my girlfriend Jamie, who's in the chat room, she's listening right now. She changed her, on Facebook. You have this option of having a relationship status, and
yeah.
For a while, the relationship status on for us has been complicated. It's complicated. That's the status we went with. You know, it expresses that there's more there than just being in a relationship, but you know, didn't go into too much detail. And Jamie took a hiatus from Facebook for a period of time. Finally came back on Facebook, updated her status as we're being in a relationship. And she's, you know, she's usually kind of weird about stuff like that. She doesn't like, you know, being out there publicly like I do, I guess. And, well, she's changed her status. She changed her status tonight from it's complicated, I'm assuming that's what it was, to in an open relationship with. And, of course, I had to confirm that we're in an open relationship. Well, this is the way it's been since the very beginning. We've been together for 9 years, and we've always been in an open relationship. So this, you know, I had to make this confirmation and everything. And I thought that pretty much everybody in my family knew the deal, you know. I mean, you look at me, you look at what I do, you look at the kind of artwork I put out and what I write about and what I talk about. You know that if you're going to be with me, if you're going to be in a serious relationship with me, you got to be a little bit freaky. So Jamie puts out, you know, she changes her status that we're in an open relationship. And, of course, Facebook has to have me confirm that we're in an open relationship before it will change the status on my page. So when I log in Facebook tonight, I see that Jamie's changed her status. And there's already somebody that has liked the idea that she's changed her status on Facebook. And I'm wondering about this chick that from Northside High School back in Fort Wayne, Indiana, that says she likes the fact that Jamie is in an open relationship. Oh, I was like, okay, I guess that's cool. And then by the time I'm done changing it over on mine, you know, confirming on mine that she's got another like from back in Fort Wayne, Indiana, another chick, you know. And I knew Jamie was popular and shit, but anyways, I changed it, and of course it updates your status on Facebook when you make those kinds of changes. So it's out there to everybody who's connected to your Facebook profile there.
Geez.
And my brother, right, my younger brother, his comment on the change in status was, "What?" You know, and I commented back that I knew that was going to be the one reaction from the person that, you know, I was expecting it to be from. And he's like, "So what's going on?" So I've been, this is what I was doing up to the show, which is why I didn't get to Rotten until about 3 seconds before the show started. I have been putting together the bunk beds to go in one of my kids' rooms. What the hell else was I doing? Looking at this Facebook thing, trying to, you know, write a little thing to my brother to bring him up to speed. And he's not a rube by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been married to the same woman for years, you know, lives in the house, you know, has the same job and everything else. So while he's aware of these other lifestyles, and he should have been aware with the number of women I've been with the number of freaky things he's seen in my house. I mean, he's seen women, you know, nude, posing, getting painted and shit like that. He's seen, at least he's seen pictures of stripper parties and different crazy shit. So he knew the score, but I don't know. I think this kind of threw him off, especially since we've been together for so long. I think what he's thinking is all of a sudden we're in an open relationship, and he didn't realize that, you know, this has actually been the case, you know, since from the very word go, basically. So I got to bring John up to speed. I'll let him what's going on. So anyway, that's my evening. So putting the beds together, changing the ad on the Ooze page there, telling my brother what's going on Facebook, and there's some other stuff I had going on. So we're here, and 10 minutes into the show. How are things going with you, man?
Yeah, things are going pretty good, man. School's decent, I suppose. This semester's been kind of hard to get into, I suppose. It was one of those kind of deals that I guess I did really so well the first semester. I kind of kind of sloughed everything off this semester, I'm kind of looking back and realizing that I might have, really should have possibly done more. I might not have done enough to actually pass the semester. I mean, I'm probably going to be able to scrape together, you know, next month and a half, you know, no big deal. But still, yeah, I'm not really completely sure how I'm going to do this semester, man. I've definitely not done my fair share of the work.
When is your spring break?
I already had it, man.
So you already had it, okay. So you're like down here. They celebrate spring break down here in March. Up north, they do it, they do it in April. So, hopefully, man, you can find a way to get that grade back up. If not, though, I mean, it's college, so you just pay for the class again, basically. Sucks, but yeah, that's, I mean, that, and hopefully if you got the same, you know, same schedule and everything else, you got half the work done already. So,
the thing is, it's supposed to be kind of behind the eight ball and getting my major done in a, you know, good period of time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know there's a lot of talk here locally with the college, with UT. They're talking about what they got to do to get these kids in and out the door in 4 years, you know, with a degree in their hands. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what they got to do to motivate people to make sure they do a four-year degree and don't take 5 or 6 years to get a four-year degree. So it's not, you're not the only one, then. So tonight we're talking about racism, and we're talking about, this is kind of spurred by the whole Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing, and this is a continuation of the show last week where we kind of talked about a lot of different angles on the whole, first of all, the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing, talking about, you know, racism in general, and my feelings on, you know, we talked about the race baiting thing that's going on. A lot of people use racism kind of as a lever to sway public opinion, and this has basically been one of those situations where from the new Black Panther Party all the way to the, you know, mainstream media have tried to use this particular situation. George Zimmerman, like, for example, George Zimmerman is clearly a Hispanic male, okay? His father, I believe his mother is Hispanic. His father is European-American. If people want to be called African American, I think it's only fair that they're, you know, you call white people European American, whatever. Okay, so and he is. Whenever there's that situation where you've got a biracial person, it's typically the ethnicity that is expressed, or the desired, you know, term that you use. Okay, so it's funny that, you know, when we talk about Barack Obama, who has an African father, black father, and a white mother, he is black, first black president. When we talk about this. Okay, so we just had a little break in the show there. Technical issues, it wouldn't be the use without some sort of technical problem. We got some weird weather going on in Texas right now, so I think my signal just kind of dropped. So we're just going to try to pick up right where we left off. Rotten, you're on the line, right?
Yeah, I'm here apparently, yes.
Okay, so what I was saying was, you know, you got this George Zimmerman guy is being portrayed as white when he is, In any other form, he would be Hispanic. If he were getting an award for something, the media would be referring to him as a Hispanic male. But in this situation, since he shot a black kid, they portrayed him immediately as white. And then as it became more and more obvious this guy was not a white guy, They've shifted to white Hispanic and then to Hispanic. Another thing that you see going on, Trayvon Martin was 17 years old. He's a 17-year-old black male. I have yet to see a photo of Trayvon Martin at 17 portrayed in the media.
Yeah.
Okay. He is always, the pictures being shown of Trayvon Martin, he's always 12 years old or 14 years old. Again, the media wants to make sure that you are aware that this is a child. While in most states, if this kid were to commit assault or to engage in a robbery or commit basically any other kind of crime, he'd be tried as an adult because of his age. So
well, maybe he's one of those young faced kids. Maybe, you know, he was actually 17 in those pictures. I mean, how do we really know that? Have they actually stayed back at 12?
I've actually checked this. I've actually checked into this because there were people, there were pundits talking about this, about how the pictures being portrayed, shown of Trayvon Martin, almost every picture they've seen has been of him either 12 years old or 14 years old. I have yet to see a picture of him at 17 in my scouring the internet. When you Google Trayvon Martin, you'll be hard-pressed to find a picture of him at 17, especially with the way the media has kind of blanketed with, you know, pictures of him from back in his junior high days when he was a football player and stuff like that. So, it's just a way that the media has been manipulating things. And now, I guess to bring everybody up to speed, if you haven't been paying attention to this kind of shit, which part of me is like, you know, why would you, other than it's being used to kind of pin or push the different aspects of our culture against one another. The disenfranchised on one side thinking that the other group, I mean, and neither group is any more or less disenfranchised than the other. That's what I think is crazy about the whole race issue, is that, you know, there's just as much as there's ghetto black people who are, you know, desperate and willing to do whatever it takes and do some crazy shit, there's poor white trash on the other side of the line who are just as, you know, just as desperate, just as kind of scuzzy and weird and everything else. And it's this whole this seems to be this need in our culture to press these two sides against one another instead of kind of just resolving all this and getting rid of all this, which is why we see this kind of thing being exasperated.
It's kind of sad to say that without racism, that I don't know if the African Americans know what to do themselves anymore. If it wasn't for that being a button issue or a hot topic in today's society, or even 50 years ago, you know, that basically they would not know what to do themselves, because they actually need, especially, you know, look at Jesse Jackson, things like that, or your Al Sharptons, for instance, they need that whole rub to things to actually, hell, even have a career, have places to go and talk. They need that. They need racism to basically do what they do. If it wasn't for racism, they'd be out of a job. And then who are the blacks, African Americans, whatever, have to blame for their shortcomings anymore? Because it's always we are disenfranchised. It's always that someone's keeping us down. Well, no, it's you keeping yourselves down. It's your culture keeping you down. It's the way you're being raised that's keeping you down. Anyone else, your damn fault. Without racism, they have no one to blame but themselves.
Right, and it's human nature to prefer to have an enemy. That's the root of your problems, rather than, you know, actually taking responsibility for yourself. Christianity is founded on that very principle, that you can be blameless for your sins. The responsibility goes to the devil, basically. It's just part of the way we function, the way we tick. And absolutely, there's a lot of denial. There's a lot of cultural identity that's missing. When you consider the black culture, these people, they know, having gone back to Africa, some of them, and coming back to their stories, that they're not accepted. They were never accepted. That the people that were sold as slaves to, you know, the colonies or whatever, to the slavers, and to be quite frank, the original slavers were, well, I shouldn't say the original slavers, the first non-African slavers were Muslim. They came into Africa and purchased slaves that way and then sold those slaves then to Europeans. But these people that were bought and sold were already slaves in Africa. And I actually heard somebody, a black man, talking about it today, about how, you know, this is something they recognize, that they don't have that culture. So when they seek back to Africa, when they reach back to Africa for the roots and everything else, that's kind of, you know, being in denial. But anyways, that's kind of, and we're going to get into that. But
you know, it's funny, man.
Go ahead.
What's funny, man, is if you look at a lot of, you know, the African-Americans here in the U.S., you would take all of them, put them in a line, and then bring people from Africa over, even, you know, in the southern islands. A lot of them are lighter skinned than they are. You know why? Because basically 70% of them are actually mixed with white. Because a lot of
right.
the slavers, back in the day, they would fuck their life, well, basically their livestock, which was their slaves, and to basically increase their population. That's how they did it, man. So
well,
a lot of them are technically half white or part white even today.
Well, and there's an agenda in the United States, and there's a, it's been in place for a long time. There's been a movement that's been very anti-American for whatever reason, and very anti-the United States having its own cultural identity, against the United States being its own whatever. And it's grown. It definitely, you know, it definitely took, you know, grew by leaps and bounds in the 70s during the whole counterculture movement and everything that was going on. So you've got this. So when you look at, you know, the especially with the African American people, when they were part of that, it was, you know, their fight for equality was co-opted by this counterculture movement. So now counterculture is part of their identity, and they're seeking equal rights. So it's not a matter of this culture having equality by having the same processes and doing the same things and pursuing the same goals and having the same values and methodologies. They have to have a separate culture, whatever that means, even though they aren't technically – I mean, they're as much American as anybody else that came here and took the land from the Native Americans, basically.
Exactly.
They're just as involved in all that. They're just as rooted in what we've got going on here, this experiment that we've been engaging in for the last 200-plus years. Anyways, this whole thing, the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin thing, just to bring people up to speed real quick, a couple of audio experts, one guy who has a computer program, and he's like a bigwig. He gets called into court for all this kind of stuff all the time, with a computer program to try to figure out, you know, whose voice matches whose. There was a big issue about one of the audio tapes. You could hear somebody yelling for help while somebody was making a 911 call about
yep.
this fight going on outside. Two of these audio experts that I've heard from, the one that I consider kind of more valid than the other because he does have this technology that does actually do sound sampling and everything, said that he concluded based on this tape that what should have been, if it were George Zimmerman yelling for help, a 90% or above verification, validation, was only 48%, which suggests to him that the person yelling for help is not George Zimmerman. Now, that is not to say that the person yelling for help is Trayvon Martin. Only the person yelling for help is not George Zimmerman. So if it's not George Zimmerman, which George Zimmerman says he was yelling for help, and this, so it may be off. This is audio being recorded during a 911 call through a cell phone from somebody else who could hear what was going on but could not see it. So there's all kinds of other things going on there. But there could have been somebody else out there during whatever was going on yelling for help. But the audio expert saying it's not George Zimmerman. On top of that, you've got this footage. We talked about last week about how they didn't, you know, put George Zimmerman in handcuffs and take him to jail. Well, in fact, they did. Put him in handcuffs, put him in the squad car, and took him downtown. And then when he got downtown, the chief of police and the district attorney, which is weird that they were there on February 26th was a Sunday night. That was a little hinky, but apparently his dad is a judge, George Zimmerman, or was a judge. They meet him down there, and they tell him to let him go. The video of George Zimmerman getting out of the squad car, he said his nose was broken. He didn't get treatment that night for a broken nose, but he said his nose was broken, and his head had been scuffed or whatever from being pounded in the concrete by this Trayvon Martin kid, okay? When they showed him getting out of the squad car, he had no visible wounds based on the grainy video that you see. The nose didn't look swollen. There was no bruises. There was no blood on his shirt based on what you saw. And when he turned, you know, to walk away from the camera, there looked like there was no scratch mark on his head, no grass on him and everything else. Of course, you know, that has been used as evidence to suggest that George Zimmerman was not in a fight with this kid, was not on the bottom, on the ground, or what have you. Instead, though, other people have now come out and said, you know what, when the EMS shows up, which the EMS was on the scene, the EMS showed up, they did clean him up. They did clean blood off his face. They did clean blood off the back of his head. They did get the grass and shit off of him before they put him in a squad car. So when he gets to wherever he's going, to the police station, that's why there's not an obvious sign of blood. And then apparently this grainy video, when it is digitally enhanced, you do see scratches on the back of the guy's head, cuts on the back of the guy's head. You do see some shit that you don't see in the original video posting. The other thing that's going on, let me see what's the other thing that's going on. This Trayvon Martin's corner has come out. Now a mortician who is involved in treating Trayvon Martin's body for the funeral. So this man is not the coroner. He is not a state expert. He is simply a person at a funeral home who prepares the bodies. It was his unexpert opinion upon seeing Trayvon Martin's hands that Trayvon Martin hadn't been in a fight, hadn't been hitting anybody.
Oh, bullshit, okay. Man. When they actually do the autopsy, they actually bathe dead body. They generally clean
right.
the person up. He's full
right.
of shit.
Right, but you've got all this back and forth bullshit going. On top of all this little drama, to add things to all this shit, I think it was NBC. One of the 911 calls, if you listen to the 911 call, George Zimmerman's calling into 911, and he's reporting some stranger walking through his neighborhood. He says that the guy's wandering around, it's raining outside. He looks kind of confused. He looks like he might be up to no good. The 911 dispatch operator asks him, okay, do you see him? What does he look like? Is he black, white, Hispanic, what? And George Zimmerman answers, he's black. NBC has been playing an audio of that conversation where George Zimmerman says his bit. You know, there's a guy out here. I don't recognize him from the neighborhood. He's walking around. It's raining outside. He looks like kind of confused. He looks like he's up to no good. They cut out the 911 operator. So the next thing you hear is George Zimmerman saying, he's black. Almost like he was saying, he looks like he's up to no good, he's black.
Yep.
You follow that? Okay. So,
now,
again.
You're getting at the idea that there was more to it, but it was cropped out just to make him look a little bit more guilty or more of a racist in the public mindset, to basically damn him.
Right, right. They wanted to. It's a better story if it's a racist who lost control and shot a black kid. So this is your media, your national media, manipulating the facts. And I don't think that George Zimmerman is guiltless. I think George Zimmerman is a nut, from what I understand, that shouldn't have been out there carrying a gun. That he should be found, if not criminally culpable in the death of this kid, he should be at least found, you know, culpable in civil court. That he and his family should be paying out on this.
I'll tell you, man.
I give it
the 1 year anniversary. Let's just say this whole thing dies down. Nothing comes of it. No civil case against George Zimmerman or even even different people in Florida, for instance. I give it at least 1 year, right around the anniversary, that he'll come out with a book. He'll get rich. And then he'll be the hero again. That's always how it seems to be, isn't it? You can be completely down and out in a news story. A year later, you come out with a book, and you're right back on top. It's basically just how the media works in this country.
Well, and yeah, and if the book's handled right, if the book, you know, if it's handled as, you know, he was demonized by the media or demonized by the public, you know, and he was a victim in all this, too.
You know what's
going to
happen, man? And then if that's how it goes down, the media is going to be all just basically kissing his ass, saying, we believed you all along. That's how it's
right.
going to happen, man. That's
right.
how it always happens, you know?
Well, I kind of see this. The fact of the matter is, as far as all the court action, which is it's coming, you know, eventually George Zimmerman is going to have to show up in court. He's going to have to face, you know, his accusers and things of that nature. He's going to have to deal with this. The fact of the matter is, you've got these official police reports. Whether the reports were right or wrong, you have official police reports. You have the technicians, the ambulance technicians that were there on the scene that actually cleaned George Zimmerman up. You have the official coroner's report, not just some mortician, the official coroner's report. You've got the 911 calls, not the doctored calls, but the full 911 calls, and you have George Zimmerman's testimony. The only testimony that's missing that could actually suggest that George Zimmerman is guilty of what he's being accused of is Trayvon Martin's. And
yeah.
We're not going to hear from Trayvon Martin. So it's up to the state and his accusers to prove that George Zimmerman's story is false. And I am still not seeing any evidence. I'm not saying that I believe George Zimmerman, but I'm saying that if the onus is on the state or the onus is on his accusers to prove that he's a liar, prove that he murdered this kid, they don't have a case.
Nope. I wonder if in some regard the fact the reason why they're not at least trying to prosecute him. He hasn't been brought in front of a grand jury to see what the charges would even be in, you know, a trial. He hasn't brought in front of any of this. I wonder if that's partially the state realizing that, hey, there's not much we can do here. Family's going to go with a civil case because we really cannot prosecute this guy.
Right. Well, the civil case would have to be, it can't be brought by the state. The civil case would have to be brought by somebody else.
No. I know it's brought by the state. I know it's brought by the family. I'm saying that the reason why he hasn't been charged with anything is because the state knows that there's no way to win a case in it. There's no way for the state to win a case at convicting him guilty.
Well, I'm pretty sure at this time the state of Florida and that county and that city does not want this case brought to trial. They would like it all to go away. Because when it does come to trial and it's shown that, you know, the answer is going to be not that George Zimmerman's not guilty, but simply that there is not enough evidence to convict George Zimmerman of anything he's being accused of. That's going to be what you hear from the courts. Not guilty, but he can't be convicted because there's not enough evidence. The people that are they're opposing George Zimmerman, the people that want to see this guy hang or whatever, their civil case is going to be against Florida. It's going to be against that city. It's going to be against that county because the cops, in their opinion, did not do their due diligence.
Yeah, and you know, here's the most hilarious thing. Let's say this guy, let's say it all goes to trial. The jury cannot come up with a verdict of not guilty. They're saying he's innocent, but they have doubts. And that's basically just going to feed right into this whole media frenzy about him anyways. Look at the same thing with that Casey Anthony. She was apparently not found guilty, but everyone still thinks she killed her daughter. It's going to be the same, thing in that case as well.
Right, but then Casey Anthony, you're pretty much, they got the not guilty case. You know, the media played it for a little bit. It was a no story anymore because she's not guilty, and it went away. This is what's going to happen to the George Zimmerman guy. I don't think there's a jury. If there's a jury involved, I don't think they're going to come back with we can't convict him because there is enough. They're going to come back with not guilty. You know, that the evidence, basically, you know, the only evidence they have clearly, you know, suggests that there's nothing to oppose what George Zimmerman's saying. And there's going to be all these people, you know, howling for blood because they think this is bullshit. And then it's going to go away. Until about a year from February 26, 2013, there'll be a big deal about it. And the news everywhere will be caring, you know, it's the anniversary, 1 year since Trayvon Martin's been shot. There's a vigil, you know, the family still is, you know, calling for, you know, an investigation and blah, 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 and all the other shit. And that'll be probably about as far as it goes. Okay.
Yep.
You expect, you know, before you see that George Zimmerman book, expect a book to come out from Trayvon's parents.
I don't know. I have doubts. Think of George Zimmerman first and the parents. I don't think, no matter how much he's vilified in the media, I think it's definitely going to be him first. It kind of, in a way, it kind of has to be, doesn't it, though? With how the media is acting, it really has to be him first before the family. I know that sounds, I mean, of course, for his family, kind of saying, you know, sucks to be you, but that's just how it always plays out, man. It's always the one who has the least good press in the media that brings it up first.
We're gonna have to see. We'll see how it goes now. And the whole thing's a fucking mess. And the big thing is, to me, the big story, the big issue for me is not. I mean, it's tragic that this one asshole ran into this other asshole, and somebody died over it. That's a tragedy. Okay, it shouldn't have gotten that far. But then
how is it a tragedy? It happens every single day. How is it a tragedy
that
17-year-old black kid died? Come on now.
It's tragic that I'm aware of it. Okay. It's tragic that it's a story, and what's really the real travesty is the way it's being used by these people. You know, and when you talk about Trayvon Martin's parents, you know, they go out and fucking copyright or patent these two phrases that have become popular around their kids shooting. The way that this new Black Panther Party, who is really an anti-white, anti-Jew, bigoted organization comes out and tries to use this to further their agenda. The way that fucking Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson have stepped up and they've made, you know, they want to remind the people that they're still alive. And the way the media has just ginned this up.
Ridiculous. Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson need to jump off a bridge. They're not doing any good for themselves. They're not doing any good for the black people. They're basically keeping them down just like they feel as if white men is doing. They're doing it to them. They're doing it to their own goddamn race.
Well, you're right. It's self-perpetuating their own business. They're in the business of race baiting. They're in the business of making sure that this particular culture feels disenfranchised. And if that business goes away, then so do they. So does their livelihood.
Yep.
So
how do you fix that in the mindset of the American people? That how do you get that through to people? How do you get that through to the black culture? They have no one to blame but themselves for the ones that they hold in such high regard, like Sharpton and Jackson.
Well, I think that it's going to go one of two ways. Okay, and this is again one of those issues that makes me sick of the American culture, is that we're half-assed once again. We're in the middle. We're this middle line kind of thing where you tell these people that they should have their own culture, they should be proud of who they are, they should have their own identity and everything else, and then you tell the other side that you should, you know, treat everybody equally with respect and everything else, and that nobody's better than anybody else, and the whole bit. And this is our, you know, bipolar culture basically at work. That's what you see going on. So it has to go one of two ways. Either you insist that in the United States there is one cultural standard, and anything that deviates from that cultural standard is wrong. It's not just a matter of – you say that, but it was that way at one time. Or let me explain it another way. When I say one cultural standard, I mean that there are parameters, and that if you stray outside those parameters, that's not acceptable. So the 50s U.S. have that kind of standard.
What happened?
Where if it blew up in the 60s and 70s, you have this whole equality movement. But I'm just saying that's one, and it's the solutions I'm presenting are extreme. I recognize that. So you either have one cultural identity. You rebuild this idea of you are in the United States. Black, white, brown, green, polka dots, it doesn't matter. You are a citizen of the United States, and therefore you have this cultural identity. And we want you to bring the nuances of your other culture into it. We want you to bring that, you know, that experience and those things into it. But the bottom line is you speak English here. You have certain borders here. There are certain laws here that you are required to follow. And when you sit there and say that, how you convince this one segment of our population that they need to be responsible for themselves, that it's their own damn fault, by insisting that that's one of the standards for everybody. You're responsible for yourself here. It's your own damn fault, no matter what. Take ownership of it. You either do that. That's the one extreme. The other extreme is to sit there and say that each and every ethnicity, including European Americans, have a distinct cultural identity. And any lack of respect or understanding of another person's distinct ethnic culture is wrong.
Okay, I have a third one, actually. There's actually a third extreme. It's actually the same one we're perpetuating now. We simply bury our heads in the sand and hope it goes away. That hope the whole issue becomes null and void.
Right. And
we
as
do
long
nothing.
As you got people perpetuating it, and that's one of the other things. Either solution you deal with, one of the ways to achieve either solution that is different from the one you're talking about, where we just bury our heads in the sand, pretend there is no racism, to pretend there is no problem. Okay.
We have been, haven't
well, you could, I, you could argue. I mean, you could argue in many ways there isn't. There isn't a racism problem unless people want to be racist, unless people want there to be a racism problem. We see that with what's going on. We see that with the way the news media has had to exasperate this whole thing. We've seen that with the way this Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson of the world had to step up and make it a racial issue. It's not enough that it's just some guy shooting some kid. That wasn't enough. It had to be racist as well. So when you're, one of the things you have to do is that any suggestion that any one race is being opposed or oppressed or threatened by or held down by another race, we make those people that have that opinion seem like rubes, seem like culturally backward buffoons. It worked with the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan back in the day was a political force that you, as a white male in politics, you had Klan connections that actually carried you forward, that helped you succeed in your political field back in, you know, the 1800s. I know I'm talking about a long time ago, but there was a time in this culture where that kind of thing was accepted and encouraged. And when we shifted our cultural identity, what's that?
Didn't we also have a senator who, shit, I know he's still alive, but probably not, but he was actually a member, high-ranking member of Ku Klux Klan before he got elected in politics.
Oh, we've had senators, we've had congressmen, we've had, you know, mayors and governors, and we've had all kinds of politicians who have been in our history have been members of the Klan or participated in some way or supported what was going on in the Klan. But when the cultural identity shifted, because politicians don't have a cultural core, a core set of values. Their set of values is whatever their constituents say it is. And that's what you are as a politician. That's what defines you. Is what is the opinion of your constituents? That's the way it's supposed to work. So not bad-mouthing politicians. It's just the way they are. They're slimy, you know, shapeless beings who have nothing within themselves. They're only a reflection of what gets them voted in power. But what happened was is that as we decided as a people to embrace this idea of diversity, embrace this idea of equality for all people and everything else, we started looking down at these bigoted opinions, these bigoted prejudices and everything else as being passé, as being antiquated, as being an ugly part of our culture from the past that we wanted to get away from. So we've moved into that stage.
That's all fine and good. Saying it's antiquated, we want to move past it. But both sides in that weren't exactly playing fair, now were they? You know,
right. But that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So you've got one segment of the population that has been encouraged to engage in that mode of thinking. You've got another side of the population that has been encouraged to actively avoid that mode of thinking. Stay black. That's the phrase in the hood. Stay black. Okay, if you can sit there and say in a place of employment, you can sit there and say, well, it's about black power. It's about brown power. I've heard that. It's about brown power. But if you say white power, that's racist. It's automatic. Brown power, black power, well, that's cultural identity. That's respect and pride. That's what's going on there. But white power, that's racist. You know what? They're all racist. That's the thing. That's what's missing there. They're all racist. So until we are able to, as a culture, make any kind of expression of racism, no matter what the source, seem antiquated and backward and foolish, we're going to be mired in this thing, you know, forever. It's always going to be that way.
You know, I hate to say this about the media. Well, actually, it's pretty much exactly true. The reason I think why they're pushing this whole idea of the race issue is that they need the numbers, man. The war isn't providing numbers anymore for viewers. No celebrity has been knocked off yet, at least not yet. The elections aren't providing enough news feeds, enough blotters to really satisfy the American public for their news sensationalism. And here we are. We have a 17-year-old black kid who got shot. Well, if this was a black-on-black shooting, a white-on-white shooting of the same age group, same age variance between Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, this wouldn't be a news article. This wouldn't be anything other than, hey, a black kid shot a black kid, a white kid shot a white kid. Big deal. Shit happens. Mm-hmm. But the media needed this to be black-on-white, apparently, or as they're trying to portray it as. They needed that because it was a slow work day. It was a slow news day.
Right. It was a slow media cycle. We're tired as a society. We're tired of hearing about Afghanistan. We're tired of hearing about the war. Nothing new going on there. The political thing is dragging itself out. We're tired of hearing about the GOP and the Republicans, just like you're saying. Nobody gives a shit about the NBA anymore. So, you know, the baseball season's over, football season's over. We're going into springtime. It's, you know, school's coming to a close and things like that. Nobody's paying attention. So, you know, what do you got to do to sell newspapers, to sell, you know, commercials during your nightly news broadcast? Exactly what you're saying. Sensationalize a non-story. And that's what happened here.
I mean, hell, it was, what, a couple years ago, it was the whole Michael Jackson thing. That thing went on for freaking ever. And we had Anna Nicole Smith. We had all these celebrities in, basically in the middle of different things going on, or even if during the war itself things got really, really bad. They just threw in a celebrity death. Woohoo! We have something else to look at for a couple of weeks, couple of months, whatever, what have you.
Right on. That's precisely what happened here. And the messed up thing is, I mean, the media is a reflection of, in many ways, the people. So the media is just feeding the beast, basically. The media is just feeding the monsters that are inside all of us. I mean, here we are. We've spent two shows talking about this particular issue. It gets your attention. Now, we're talking about, we're less and less interested in, you know, was it a racially motivated shooting or whatever. We're more interested in how everybody's responding to it. And that's, you know, that's what we're doing. But still, you know, it has our attention. We're talking about it. And that's why, you know, don't watch mainstream television anymore, kids. Come listen to the news. We'll give you all the news you need. Tuesday nights, we'll fill you in on whatever you want to think about. We'll tell you what to think here on the news.
When I heard that this even happened, I was basically shrugged and said, "Shit happens." It wasn't anything that I considered to be that big of a deal.
Yeah, because you're right. It happens all the time. It's going on, you know, constantly. You know, people die. People die violently. People die, you know, horrible deaths. And it's only a story if, you know, either they die in an extraordinary way, you know, a bicycle pump to the penis until they inflate their bladder until they burst. That's extraordinary. That'd be a news story I'd want to listen to. Or the media wants it to be extraordinary. And I, it says a lot, too. That's something else I've been heard being banting about. It says a lot that if it's a white person shooting a black person, it's a story. It's huge. And what's sad is the reason it's a story is because a black person shooting a black person is just a daily event. It's just so commonplace.
And what was it say about the culture that we've gotten to the point to where a black guy shooting a black guy is normal? What would it say for us as a society that we just view it as normal? We should basically view it the same way as if it was a white-on-black shooting.
Well, see, I guess my thing would be, you know, a human being shooting a human being, that's normal.
Yeah, it is.
When a dog or a monkey, you know, picks up a gun and does the shooting, that's a story. You know, that's worth checking out. But, yeah, a human being shooting a human being, that's, you know, that's commonplace. It happens. This kid, I shouldn't say kid. I guess that's the other shooting that's gone down here last week or so. This 46-year-old guy that walked into, he was a student at a Korean Christian college, California, walked to his old school and shoots up the place. Tells a bunch of people to stand in line. He's going to kill them. I think he killed 7 people and wounded 16 people. And then went down to the local, I know, Save-A-Lot, Quickie Mart, or something like that, and surrendered to the cashier or something. I don't know. But now, I mean, the spin on this, of course, is you got the Trayvon Martin shooting, this shooting. The talk now is, of course, what do we do about all these guns? What do we do about all, you know, how violent we are? How, you know, how like the Wild Wild West it is? And I think that's funny when people use that analogy of the Wild Wild West, because back in, you know, the 1800s or whatever, when it was the Wild Wild West out here in the West, first of all, it wasn't that wild. When you walked around and you knew that every male that you saw was packing heat because you didn't leave the house without your gloves, your cane, your hat, and your gun, you know, it didn't matter if it was, you know, fucking Nevada or New York City, you were packing heat, you were a lot more polite to one another. Okay. You said please and thank you and excuse me if you bumped into somebody. You know, you were terribly, terribly sorry because you didn't want to get shot.
That sounds pretty damn near accurate. Also, mentioning this whole Korean thing, over the last 5 years, you've kind of seen more of an uprise within the Korean or Chinese populations. They're kind of shooting people more and more. Over the last 5 years, you had a couple of school shootings. You had one here in southern New York, actually. You had one at a university, I believe it was, and they have this one. In my opinion, there seems to be somewhat of an uprise within the Korean population that is happening. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm, you know, grasping at straws. I don't know. That's kind of what I'm noticing.
Well, as you see an uptick in any particular culture in the United States, whether it's, you know, Asian, whether it's Muslim or Middle Eastern, whether it's, because you can't say Muslim and refer to the entire Middle East because that's not the only religion there. So it's, you know, Middle Eastern, Asian. Right now, the fastest growing ethnicity in the United States is Hispanic, and then, you know, followed by Asian. So as these people become more and more, you know, a part of our society, you're going to hear about more and more crime committed by these people. They're people just like us. So prone to our own excesses and delusions and whatever. They're going to have some crazy shit going on. On top of that, they come from often a radically different kind of culture. Cultures where life doesn't necessarily have the same value. And I don't know that I'm not to say that, you know, the value we place in the individual life in the United States is correct. In many ways, I think it's ridiculous to, you know, assume that a life has that kind of value on it. I mean, I read some sort of statistic once that genetically, if you were just to take your genetic makeup, there are six people just like you on the planet. That statistically, that's how many of you there are at any one given time that have your exact same genetic makeup. Okay, so twins, basically. It's just random occurrences from the gene pool. So, you know, your contribution to society might be unique, but the bottom line is we're talking about a species who's, for all of our technological prowess, it's about our ability to reproduce. It's about our ability to carry on as a, you know, a life form. The only thing that matters is that we pass on our genes. So, as we see these different cultures increase, we're going to see an increase in these crimes. And I like it's especially amongst the Hispanics, especially, you know, here in the South in Texas where I kind of see this shit. One of the things I see that's really difficult or is a real issue for a lot of these folks, especially with their men. In Mexico City, the men, especially the men who typically, and this is the way it is with any culture, if you have a minimal education, if you have a minimal grasp of your own language, let alone, you know, any other language, if you have a minimal grasp of, you know, different moral behavioral standards, well, then when you get out there in the world, you're going to act like an idiot. In Mexico City, the buses getting people back and forth to work from, you know, the bullshit, you know, basic jobs back and forth to work are packed with people. And they come from all over the place. The poor people come from all over the place to work whatever bullshit job they're working at and then head home. Well, these buses would get packed with people. You got a driver at the front of the fucking bus. He's the only sense of authority on the fucking bus. And then it is packed, and there are women scattered amongst the men. Well, what was going on is that the men were molesting and, in some cases, raping the women on these buses. And nobody could do shit. There were so many bodies packed in that you couldn't get to the woman between, you know, to rescue her, and you had to fight your way through a rape gang to get to her, okay? So Mexico City, in order to deal with this issue, and you could look this up on Google, they came up with this pink bus line where the bus was for women only, okay? But you've got this culture that sees women basically as just – they shouldn't be going to work. They're very very Christian, very Roman Catholic in the way they see things. So, you know, women going out and earning a living and everything else, that's offensive to some of these men. So these men then come here to the United States, okay, and they are, you know, they don't speak the language. They don't know our rules. I mean, hell, I'm not saying they're all illegal, but if they arrive here illegally, they obviously don't give a shit about what our rules are.
Yeah.
And then they see these women walking around. And, you know, our American women are very liberated. They're very free to do what they want. They dress the way they want. They look the way they want. They're very empowered, and they feel much safer walking our streets than they would a street in another country. Okay, they're more expressive in and of themselves. So when these men see these women walking around, you know, as they will, they get a little ridiculous. They get a little, you know, a little crazy, and it's getting them in trouble because these women that they're going up to, that they're, you know, getting too close to in the grocery stores, convenience stores, that they're fondling in different places, these women don't hesitate to pick up their fucking cell phones and call 911.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I think it's time to put up a wall against Mexico. I think, you know, leave maybe a 4 to 5 mile stretch open, let people sit on a hill. You know, if you happen to cross that line and you're not dead, then, hey, you deserve to be in the country. That's how I feel about it.
Well, you got this. The Mexican president came up here this week to talk about how we need to get our assault rifles under control. We need to ban assault rifles once again because assault rifles being banned in the United States, when the ban was lifted, violence escalated by assault rifles in Mexico. Okay? So it's our fault here in the United States because we're not banning assault rifles, that violence is going on in Mexico. The question I would ask that the Mexican president is that if that's the case, if the lack of a ban on assault rifles in the United States means more violence in Mexico, why aren't we seeing violence in Canada for the same damn reason?
Oh, that's crazy. What's the worst thing you're going to hear about Canada? Them, you know, hitting a moose? Come on now.
But it's not the United States. It means that, okay, so what would have been a knife fight in Mexico is now a fight with assault rifles because, you know, they have access to those weapons. And if you're not getting them from the United States, which Fast and Furious, that kind of thing, you heard about that, ATF sent down some assault rifles thinking they'd be able to track them to these arms dealers and these drug dealers and everything else and lost the entire shipment. So a couple thousand assault rifles, American-made assault rifles, goes down to Mexico and disappears until they end up shooting up our border agents or border guards and shit like that. But if they don't get them from the United States, they're going to get them from China and Russia. You know, they're going to get these weapons. The drug cartels run shit down there. But for this president to come up here, and it's the same way with Vicente Fox, it was the same thing. He came up here and spoke to Congress about how we should, when they started talking about voting about one language or a border, you know, tighter borders, he came up here and said, you cannot have one language in the United States. That puts too much of a burden on the people of Mexico. You cannot have tighter border in the United States. That puts too much of a burden on the people of Mexico. When you go to Mexico, they have an official language. The very thing that Vicente Fox is saying the United States can't have, that he has in his country. And the southern border of Mexico is one of the most heavily patrolled and tightly kept, you know, guarded borders in the world. So it's bullshit. It's all hypocritical bullshit. So we got about 2 minutes left. So that was our show. Nobody wanted to call in. I guess we wouldn't have gotten the calls anyways. I'm going to roll the outro, man. So,
okay, man.
Next week...
technology.
Hell, we got... What's that?
Isn't it technology next week?
No, I moved that because that was this week. So there's something going on next week. Let me see if I pull it up real quick. Got a few seconds. Got 90 seconds, according to the Blog Talk Radio lady. Blog Talk Radio... Hang tight. Here's... While you're waiting, Jason Srell's Coloring Book for Adults. It's on sale right now, $10.99, plus a $5 flat shipping handling rate to anywhere in the United States. Just shoot me an email or whatever if you want to get a piece of that. Next week, we will be talking about... Faster. Zombies. We're going to be talking about zombies next Tuesday.
Perfect. Okay.
We go from racism to the zombie apocalypse. So find out what's going to cause the zombie apocalypse and how you might survive on the Who's Tuesday night. All right, man. We're out of here.
All right, man. Later.
Later.